July 16, 2016, Zagreb, Croatia, increasing our commitment to ISKCON and the family of devotees. So that's what we wanted. Where's Ishwar playing? There you are. You wanted about increasing our commitment to the ISKCON and the, yes? Rather than, okay. Because, in one sense, there's really two separate topics that are interconnected. There's two separate topics that are interconnected, but they are separate. They have crossover. And one of them is increasing our commitment to Krishna consciousness, and another is increasing our commitment to ISKCON and our particular society. Now, obviously they're related, very much so, but they're not exactly the same thing. Because a person could increase their commitment to Krishna consciousness and maintain the same level of association with ISKCON. Does that make sense to everyone?
Yeah.
Okay. You don't have to become a more and more committed member of ISKCON in order to become more and more of a devotee. Is that agreed by everybody? And you wanted to look at the ISKCON side, correct? That was your thought?
Yeah, and Krishna consciousness and ISKCON.
Well, you got to decide, because it's an hour, and so you got to focus.
Society, to give the contribution to the society.
To the society. That's
a private thing which everybody does in line with his...
Exactly. So, if I was going to talk about with Krishna consciousness, I would sit on the Vyasasana and I would talk about Shraddha Prema. You understand?
Okay.
And when we teach Manashiksha, we're going to teach Manashiksha tomorrow. Correct? So Manashiksha, which we're going to be teaching tomorrow, is a lot about how we're increasing our commitment just to spiritual life. But if we're going to increase our commitment to spiritual life, it's very helpful to also be part of a spiritual family. In fact, without that, it's almost impossible. Srila Prabhupada says, to try to think you're going to become Krishna conscious outside of the society of devotees, he said it's just a hallucination. You won't be able to do it. But how committed and in what way we want to become committed to the society is another question. So that's what we're going to be looking at tonight. And I want to, I'm really exploring this, really all of these ideas. Can you all see this? And can you all read it?
Yep.
This all came from Charu Prabhu from Utah in America. This is not mine. I stole it. No, he gave it to me. And I thought that this was a very good basis for looking at levels and kinds of commitment to the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And this is a good thing to talk about, as it's ISKCON's 50th anniversary, and we just had the actual date of ISKCON's 50th anniversary. So I want to go over this, and then I really want to have this more of a discussion. So Charitable looked at levels of members. So the core members are what they would call in Christianity ministers. We'll be teaching that book tomorrow. That'll be tomorrow for the Sunday feast. So the core members are what we would call the lay ministers. We, in one sense, we ordain ministers in the Hare Krishna movement in the sense that we give second initiation, Gayatri initiation. But in another sense, even uninitiated devotees can act as ministers, as core members. And we have people who have not taken initiation, but they're frontline preachers and they're living in ashrams or really firmly committed to the mission. So these are really clergy. And again, we don't have a system of ordaining ministers. We don't have a seminary that you have to go through and you get certified that now you're a minister. Which, by the way, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati was not in favor of ordained clergy. at least not requiring ordained clergy. So we do have some tendency in ISKCON, say with Bhaktivedanta College in Radhadesh, which I'm very involved in, with the concept of ordaining clergy, which is fine, but if you require that in order to be a preacher you have to be ordained, then you start getting into bureaucracy. So these are your really, these are people who are committed not only in their spiritual practices, but they're also the main leaders and ministers and clergy in the movement. Is that pretty clear to everybody who we're talking about? Okay, then we have people who are committed. These are what we would call maturing members. So they've made a firm commitment, not only to Krishna consciousness, but also to the society. But they may not be taking on a full role as ministers and preachers within the society. Then the congregation are the regular members. So again, these people may have a very firm commitment to Krishna consciousness, but they're not taking any role of leaders or preachers within the society. Then what he calls the crowd are people who come regularly. So these may not be people that are firmly practicing. Am I going slowly enough, or am I going way too fast? I could slow down more?
It will be easier, but
all right, what about the rest of you? Should I slow down a little more?
No,
a little. Okay. So the crowd are people who are coming regularly. They're coming maybe every Sunday, every festival. But they're not really part of the society. They come and they participate. So the congregation are people who are coming and doing service. And they may even get initiated and so forth. The crowd, they're coming in and taking the benefit. Maybe they give some donation, but they're not doing some regular service. Then you have what he calls the community, and the way Charlie's defining a community are people who attend occasionally. And perhaps you could switch that. You could call. These are the names he came up with, so these are not Shastric names. These are people, they might come on Janmashtami, they come for Rath Yatra, they come to the camp, but they're not coming on a regular basis. And they might do some service when they come, etc. Now, over here, we have a different kind of commitment. So this is your commitment to ISKCON and its mission, how involved a person is in ISKCON and its mission. Then the member commitments, he talks about four different levels. That one can be committed, have a commitment to Krishna and the temple family. So this would be somewhere in your regular attendees, your crowd and your congregation would be in that level. And it could be even people who come occasionally, but you say, I'm giving my life to Krishna, I've made a commitment to Krishna, and I have some commitment also to the community, that I'm going to come sometimes, I'm going to participate sometimes, maybe I'm going to come at regular intervals. And you could see that there could be degrees of that commitment to Krishna and the temple family. You could have a very slight degree as a community, you could have a greater degree as part of the crowd, a greater degree as part of the congregation, and so forth. Then what he calls maturity is you have a commitment to habits for spiritual growth. So again, you might be at different levels in this, in circles. So you might have made a commitment here, I'm going to eat only vegetarian food that I'm going to offer to Krishna. I'm going to chant every day. I'm going to give up illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating. I'm going to read spiritual books. And again, this commitment to the habits of spiritual life could be at different levels. You could just say, okay, I'm going to offer vegetarian food to Krishna when I'm home. Or I'm only going to eat vegetarian food offered to Krishna. I'm going to chant one night, I'm going to chant 16 nights. Then you have what he calls ministry. Now, ministry he defines as not only am I doing some sadhana, but I'm also really trying to use my talents and abilities in Krishna's service. And the difference between that, sadhana is at a certain time of the day or for certain activities. So I might be just basically working like a regular person, but I have some time for meditation or I have some time for reading that I do on a regular basis. But with this ministry, I'm really trying to dedicate my life. And you could have people who are trying to use their talents in Krishna service but not taking up spiritual habits also. So this is not necessarily progressive. Then for missions, this is a commitment for preaching, a commitment to sharing, because the other three could just be for yourself or for your immediate family. And then people might say, well, all right, this is all about what I'm giving to the community, what I'm giving to the temple. What about what the temple and ISKCON is doing for me? So what he's come up with is five areas. Sadhana, Seva, Sankirtan, Sangha, and Shiksha. And he has his really nice way of describing this. And I really like Charu's system here because he's put it together for a non-Indian audience. And he's put it in terms that would make sense to a non-Indian audience. So I really like it. He obviously has had a lot of thought and prayer and meditation on this. But he defines sadhana as celebrating Krishna's presence. I really like that. There's a quote where Srila Prabhupada says that whenever you chant Hare Krishna, you should feel the presence of Krishna. Then seva, he defines that as demonstrating Krishna's love. Sankirtan as communicating Krishna's word. Sangha as assimilating into Krishna's family. And Shiksha as educating Krishna's people. So he's saying that our temple exists for these five areas. That we provide facility for sadhana, for seva, for sankirtan, for sangha, and for shiksha, both giving and receiving. Yes?
Would you please call to repeat from sankirtan?
I'll repeat for everything. He calls sadhana celebrating Krishna's presence, seva demonstrating Krishna's love, sankirtan communicating Krishna's word, sangha assimilating into Krishna's family, and shiksha as educating Krishna's people. Now, I also like this system because he obviously is a master teacher. Putting things in this form is a technique we call mind easy, where you make things easy to remember. So what we wanted to talk about tonight is how to increase our own commitment, and I think also how to get other people to increase their commitment to our sangha, to our society of ISKCON. And I think that should be seen on several levels. First of all, on the level of what we're contributing. What do we have to give? You know, what's in it for me? Kind of thing. And you can say, well, that's not supposed to be our mentality of Krishna's consciousness, but it is our mentality. Why should I be a member of ISKCON? How will that benefit? So I think we need to look at it that way. What is ISKCON giving to people? Which, frankly, I think we don't look at that often enough. We mostly look at, you know, okay, what can you give to ISKCON rather than what can our sangha give to you? And then also to look at these two different kinds of commitments. How can we assist people in developing these two different kinds of commitments, which are not necessarily parallel? And how do we get them to move from one step to another? I would also say that these member commitments, other than the first where we talk about a temple family, are possible to do, as we're seeing more and more as ISKCON develops, without going very much to an ISKCON center. What's happened in our Hare Krishna movement is that more and more of our spiritual activities of ISKCON members are taking place out of our legal ISKCON centers. Am I correct?
Yes.
It's happening more and more and more, which I think is a good thing on some levels. If we're going to go to every town and village, then we can't have everything just happen in one building. You follow me? You know, that's not very reasonable. We want people to have programs in their homes. We want more and more centers to open. So on the one hand, we want to encourage people to have more and more of these programs, 1 through 4, to have those in a variety of locations with a variety of people. At the same time, we are concerned that the actual institution of ISKCON and our legal properties don't become empty while everybody has all their programs out in the periphery. So I see this, particularly the center concentric circles, as mostly about what is happening in the legal entity of ISKCON. And I would suggest that there's been a kind of conflict, especially among those of us who've been part of ISKCON for quite some time, that we want to see people going and starting their own projects and having their own programs in homes and businesses and so many things. We very much want that. It's not that we want to stop that. We want to encourage that. And at the same time, we want the temples to grow and prosper, the temples and the projects to grow and prosper. And it seems to be difficult to figure out how to nourish both at the same time. I think it's also something like when your children grow up and they start their own families and they don't live in the family home anymore, but you also want them to come visit and be part of the family. You don't want them to just become estranged. So we don't want just the periphery to grow up at the expense of the hub. And because frankly, without our ISKCON centers, just to be very frank, there is a tendency, not among everybody, but there's a tendency among many, to go off in some strange path. And it's something that I've seen over the years. And seeing this has helped me to gain appreciation for the fact that we have a GBC body. Because sometimes we don't appreciate the fact that we have a GBC body. Some of the biggest mistakes in ISKCON came from decisions of the GBC body. Some of our greatest sorrows and difficulties came from the GBC body. And sometimes we may think, well, they're just a problem. It's just like governments, you know. Most of us have governments that they have some problems. At the same time, we wouldn't want to have no government. And we may also find that there are many countries that have much worse governments than whatever it is we have to deal with. So I see that one of the ways in which the GBC has been, maybe not 100% successful, but to a large extent successful, is in stopping any kind of major deviations. And of course, sometimes the GBC themselves have been the source of some major deviations. That's true. That's a fact. But overall, the GBC has been very successful, not 100%, at keeping people to Srila Prabhupada's teachings and Srila Prabhupada's mood and Srila Prabhupada's practices. And the GBC only has authority over legal ISKCON project. It doesn't have authority over what you do in your own home. It doesn't have authority over what you do if you start your own NGO. And so if people lose that connection with the legal entity of ISKCON, the GBC, unless they're very strong devotees, there's a very good chance of changing. And the impetus impetus to change things is very strong. In fact, Krishna talks about this. He says, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharatya bhuchanama dharmasya tadatmanam srijanaka. That whenever dharma becomes a dharma, he comes. So this means that dharma very easily, jaya shishigodi dharma can very easily turn into a dharma. Our pressures to change things, I mean, we have to change some things, as time, place, and circumstance change. But our pressure to change basic principles is there, first of all, because if we're not pure, we want to enjoy the material world in the name of Krishna consciousness. Even Arjuna struggled with this problem, don't you speak of us? And also because it can be frustrating to try to preach pure Krishna consciousness. Most people in the world are not interested in pure Krishna consciousness. That's a fact. I'd say even a large number of the members of our community and crowd are not interested in pure Krishna consciousness. What to speak of people in general. So if we want to get the numbers, there's a strong tendency to want to change presentation. So we have a strong tendency to want to change our core principles because we want something cheaper. And we have a strong tendency to want to change the core principles because people in general want something cheaper. So that push is always going to be there. And I personally see keeping the purity as one of the main reasons to encourage people to maintain some connection with our legalism centers. So I'd like, that's basically my introduction. And I'd like to open this up more to a discussion of how we can do this, how we can try to move people from, especially from community and crowd, into congregation committed and core. And again, I'll just go over again Charu's definition of these, that the core are the lay ministers. These are really the clergy of the Krishna consciousness movement. The committed are the maturing members. Congregation are the general members. And the crowd are regular attendees. And the community are not really affiliated, and they come sometimes. So basically, the congregation committed in core all say, I am a member of this. The crowd says, yeah, I like the Hare Krishna movement. Maybe I'm a member, maybe I'm not. I like to come regularly. And the community, these are his words and his definitions. Again, I don't want to argue about definitions here. The community of people who are like, yeah, yeah, you know. I like Hare Krishna. Maybe I'm a Hare Krishna devotee. You know, I know people like that who say, I'm a Hare Krishna devotee, and they only come to Rath Yatra. Right? Maybe they have Prabhupada's books in their house that they haven't opened in the last 5 years. But, what's your religion? Oh, I'm a Hare Krishna. Okay, so I'd like to open this up to ideas as to how, especially, we can go from there to there, keeping these things in mind. So our ideas can be about how in the temples we can more effectively offer these services to people. And also how we can connect people's growing commitment to Krishna consciousness to a growing commitment to Islam. And I really want to emphasize that those two things are related, but they're not exactly the same. They're not exactly the same. One can get a growing commitment to ISKCON without a growing commitment to Krishna consciousness. I've seen that a lot. And you can have a growing commitment to Krishna consciousness without a growing commitment to ISKCON. So they don't necessarily parallel each other. You know, back in the 70s, they were basically synonymous. But that is not true at the present time. Okay, so I'd like to hear from you your thoughts and ideas. Yes? Yes.
I have a question about this concept, because I'm kind of I can't grasp it, because for me, commitment to Krishna consciousness, you know, reflects commitment to ISKCON. I don't know how it is possible that this is not going on right now.
Do you know anyone who increases their commitment to Krishna consciousness without increasing their commitment to ISKCON? Do you know anybody? Really? I know hundreds of people. And the level of crowd. They come to the Sunday feast regularly. They come to all the festivals. In their personal life, they may be doing a lot of preaching. They may have some sort of preaching program that they're doing in businesses, or on the internet. And they may be using their talent. They may be doing all of those at a pretty committed level. But they're not really lay ministers in ISKCON. If you said, you remember ISKCON, they'd say yes. But they're not doing that much service for the legal entity of ISKCON. So I know hundreds of people. And it's growing. That number is growing a lot. And then I also know people have been doing regular service for ISKCON for years, and they never chant 16 rounds. You know people like that too? Yeah. They never just. They go to movies, they eat at restaurants, but they come a lot and they do a lot of service, and they're very, very committed to it. They don't want to take initiation, or they took initiation a long time ago. Oh, that was something I tried. So I also know a lot of people like that. I mean, again, hundreds of people. They're very, very committed to ISKCON in the sense of helping with the mission and doing service, but their commitment to the habits of spiritual life and using their talents and service and preaching is quite small. And it doesn't increase either, it just kind of stays at that level. If it increases, it increases slightly. So does that make sense to you? And both of those situations have become quite common. When I joined in the 70s, neither of those were common at all. They almost didn't exist. You know, a few. We basically called anyone who wasn't a core member of ISKCON Fuji. So we had just two levels. You were both three. We had core members, fringies, and then kind of some congregation, somebody, something. And there wasn't many, there weren't many. So that when I joined it. And the fringies were usually either people who'd lived in the temples and then moved outside and weren't following strictly, or in very rare cases, people who had never lived in an ashram and were just kind of following some. And then we had, you know, a few Indians who were kind of came because there weren't any Hindu temples, and that was their Hindu temple. And they weren't really fringes, and they definitely weren't core. We didn't know what they were quite. We didn't really do much with that. Just high. We didn't integrate them much. Maybe we'd make them life members. So when I joined, that was all there was. But the ISKCON has changed quite radically. It's not the same. Any other thoughts?
Yeah, practicing bhakti yoga, it's on a high level, so I think it's for most people quite unattainable to practice bhakti yoga how it's meant to be practiced. So that's my assumption, that all of these fringes, you know, as you mentioned, people are going into these different groups in some type of deviations because
they just don't feel they can maintain.
Yeah, because ISKCON maybe puts pressure for the members to maintain some purity.
Well, that's an interesting point, and this has been a difficulty actually from the beginning, that the standards that we demand of people, especially for initiation, are quite high. And especially for somebody to maintain them year after year after year. People can sometimes do it for a few months or a year, but for people to do it for 10 years or 20 years or 30 years, it seems that the majority of people cannot do that. And what often happens to people when they find they can't do that is then they start feeling uncomfortable being in ISKCON. They feel that they either have to pretend that they're something that they're not, or they're being judged, or they're shamed in some way. Yeah, that's definitely a problem. And it does lead to, again, the pressure to just change the philosophy.
Yeah.
You know, just to accommodate. Yeah, you know, well, if I can't reach the goal, let me bring the goal down into a place that I can reach. And, you know, we want to have such people be active members of ISKCON without changing our philosophy. And I think this has been a huge challenge.
When I first came, 6 years ago, to ISKCON, started coming to the temple, I didn't know what it meant to bloop. This he blooped, he, she blooped, but it's just a bloop, or to give. Still to me today, it's
Well, it used to be very clear. I mean, there was...
you can bloop and re-bloop or something.
Yeah, well, and again, you know, when this kind of started, when Prabhupada was here in the 60s and 70s, it was quite clear because Krishna consciousness and this kind were completely synonymous. And if you were in both, you lived in the temple ashram, and you were there for 4:30 in the morning, and you chanted your 16 rounds, and you followed the four principles, and you only ate food offered to Krishna, and you just worked for the mission 24 hours a day, practically. So if you stopped doing that, but you still hung around, then we would say that you blooped. Maybe you were sort of a fringy. But fringies were really, that was a really pejorative, negative term. A fringy was a bloop devotee who still hung around. Whereas if you blooped completely, then we just didn't see you at all anymore. And we certainly would have thought about the community and the crowd as being blooped. You know, if you just came for Rath Yatra or something like that, you just came for the Sunday feast.
Then I'm a
bloopy. Yeah. But as the movement spread and matured, we stopped using those terms completely. I mean, I never heard anybody talk like that. Because the lines became fuzzy, first of all. And second of all, we started to see that if we were going to mature as a society, we couldn't demand that everybody be a monk in the ashram. You know, married or unmarried, we were basically expecting everybody to be monks in the ashram. Even the married couples, the men lived in the husband lived with the brahmacharis, and the wife lived with the brahmacharis, and you know, you saw your husband a monk already. Seriously. Maybe you had a temple apartment. But then you were really in Maya if you had to have an apartment. But how are you going to spread the movement like that? You're just going to build bigger and bigger and bigger buildings. You understand?
Yeah.
And we were doing that, especially in Europe. You know, we bought these big castles and these big properties, with the idea that we were going to have 300 or 1,000 people that all lived in the same building for the rest of their life and lived communally in an ashram. And obviously, that was not sustainable. Nor does that have the slightest thing to do with an ashram and society. It's not our vision of a society. But we haven't quite figured out, okay, as we've matured as a society, how do we get people to increase in their commitment to ISKCON? That was the main thing I wanted to ask. How do we get people to increase their commitment to ISKCON? Some ideas. Yes.
Yeah.
maybe to give some more responsibility.
Oh, I like that. And in fact, if you study at all about human motivation, one of the main things that motivates human beings is responsibility. You know, and one easy way to get people to come to the morning program is give them something to do at the morning program. If you have to come to polish the deity silver, well, then you're going to come. If you think whether I come or not doesn't matter, no one's going to care. Yeah.
I was in London this week. I heard one Indian Methodist, then she say Bhakti Yoga is individual thing. Individual, yes. But I understand now that practice Bhakti Yoga is not the same like to be a member of ISKCON, because we can practice Bhakti Yoga. This is very, this is good. But if we have, we are a member of ISKCON, we can have more success. You understand?
Yes.
This is my conclusion of this.
Well, to practice Bhakti Yoga by yourself, Prabhupada said, will be almost impossible. Because one of the main features of Bhakti is Sadhu Sangha and the association of devotees. But you could get together with some devotees without being very active in ISKCON. You know, we used to say to people, the only way you're going to get the association of devotees is you have to come to the temple and you have to be active in the temple projects. That's not so true anymore. You can get together with 10 devotees in your house. You can get together with 100 devotees on the internet. In fact, I know of many devotees who do that. I was visiting a devotee's home a year ago in New York. And every morning he went to Mangalarti in Mayapur. I said, you go every morning? He said, every morning. I said, have you ever been to Mayapur physically? He said, no. It was really fascinating. But every morning he went to Mangalarti. And I know devotees who, you know, they listen to Bhagavatam class all the time. So I still have the question, how are we going to get people? I like the one about responsibility. I really like that. Yeah.
If we appreciate when it is their seriousness, their commitment, their service, we appreciate the world as well.
Okay. I think that's also, instead of seeing what they're not doing, seeing what they are doing. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
By the way, that takes some effort. Now, I don't know if he does it for the whole world, but we have a devotee named Peter Burwash. He's never taken initiation, although he had a lot of association with Sri Prabhupada. He asked Prabhupada, he said, would you initiate me at 8 rounds? And Prabhupada said, no. So he never took initiation. But he's very, very active in the movement. And he gives a presentation every year at River Vrindavan. One of the things that they do is they call different temples, might just be in North America, and they see how well they answer the phone. Does anybody answer the phone at all? What do they say? You know, they do it secretly. They don't say, hi, I'm Peter Burwash, and he has other people do it, so they won't recognize the voice. And they have a contest every year, you know, who's the best. But he also talks about visiting temples. Now, he visits temples all over the world. He travels a lot. I think he travels like 250 days a year. He's out on the road. And he will regularly visit temples, and he doesn't usually go on the Dolini Tila. And he keeps a record of, does anyone say hello? And he's found that in a lot of temples, nobody says, hello, what's your name, what are you doing here? He said he's been to temples where every people just walk by him, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And he's completely ignored. You know that feeling, yeah. And I was, I met a very interesting person recently who's an internationally known Catholic teacher. So he has thousands of followers. He's what they call a lay Franciscan. So he's a monk, but he doesn't live in a monastery. And he has a blog, he gives seminars, and many, many people he's teaching about Catholicism. But he's become a secret Hare Krishna devotee. And he said he almost didn't become a devotee because the first few temples that he went to, he was ignored. And in Catholicism, he's one of the most famous people in the world. But he was just ignored. He said that he finally went to one temple and he was so... He just felt that he didn't belong there because nobody said anything to him. And he didn't know what was wrong. It was, I think, his maybe sixth or seventh try. And he's there in the morning program and he thought, this is it. I've tried, I've been to, you know, seven temples, I'm done. And he was walking out the door and he said... one of my god sisters, Nanda, he said she crossed the gender line. You know, she walked across the temple as he was walking out the door. He says, hello, can I help you? And he said, because she did that, he decided to give it a try. He said, you're very committed to it. But, you know, you're saying appreciating people. I think appreciating people starts with, hello, can I help you? What are you doing? I mean, another thing I noticed, and I noticed this here, I also noticed it at one temple in America, that, and actually two temples in America, when you talk about appreciating people's presence, is make Krishna consciousness easy for new people. Not in the sense of changing the principles, but in the sense of the strangeness. So particularly, I'm thinking about, you know, maybe we should have this as a GBC resolution, especially on our big open houses, our Sunday gatherings, not chanting too many strange mantras. Like I noticed here at the Sunday feast that the Gaur Artik was two-thirds of the kirtan. And I was thinking, if there's any new people, they're not going to understand what are we doing. I saw this in one temple in America, where they gave, there were about three or four new people, and they gave them a sheet with mantras. You know, pranam mantras, panchatattva, Hare Krishna. But then in the kirtan, they were chanting Gaur Arti. And the guests were looking at the sheet. I really wanted to take a video of this and like show it in every temple that I went to, because it was very painful, you know, they were just lost. They were really completely lost. And then at the end of singing Gaur Arti, the kirtan leader was really, one of those really, really, really enthusiastic kirtan leaders. And he was just jaying everybody, you know. Jaya Gauranita, Jaya Gauragadara, Jaya Dvaita, Jaya Jaya Nitya. I don't know, he was jaying everybody. And again, these guests were just completely, what are they doing? What are they singing? What are they... And I think, you know, appreciating people needs to extend to that. You know, if somebody comes, and if we want them to come more, that to make them appreciate that they're there and make them feel comfortable. Yeah, right. I mean, another thing that comes to mind, I think I was mentioning this to the people we were staying with in Split, as far as appreciating people, especially bringing in new people, and I don't see this problem here, but in some temples we have ghastly paintings of the temple. So we have, you know, like Tarani said to me in one temple, she said, if you look at the picture of Miss Singhadev from a distance, it looks okay, but if you go close, you know, like, what do these people have on their walls? And there's one temple where there's a picture of Shishu Paul getting his head cut off. And it's this huge, huge picture. As big as your fall. And so you go to the Hare Krishna temple for the first time, and so here's a lion pulling someone's intestines out of their stomach, and here's some guy getting decapitated. And I said to them, I think you should change the painting. They said, yes, Giri Raswami told us that also. And I said, well, maybe you should change it. But I think that's also, appreciating people isn't just saying, oh, thank you for coming, but it also means giving them, Krishna Kshetra Maharaj was talking about this with the deities, how with our worship, you give the Lord a seat, and then you say, Susagatam, you're welcome. You wash their feet, of course. We're not going to go washing people's feet here in Croatia. But I think that principle of appreciating that someone has come, hello, what's your name? Have you been here before? And making an atmosphere where people feel comfortable, which may include, maybe on our Sunday feast we just chant Hare Krishna. We don't chant a whole lot of other mantras and things like that. And have it so people can start offering, because this offering their talents and really becoming part of the congregation committed. That people have to feel that they're welcome. So some other thoughts. Yes.
For what you were saying, I also see that we need programs that are targeting different groups. Like, for instance, our Sunday feast at the moment is a mix of everything. So devotees who are for 30 years in the moment come, new people come, devotees who are 5, 10, 20 years in the moment come, and especially for those who give the lectures, sometimes if you have a larger group, like 40, 50 devotees, like usually it's during the spring and the autumn, then you're really like in trouble, because you need to inspire those who are newcomers that just came, and you need to inspire also those who are for 20, 30 years in the movement. It's like
it's very hard to do that.
And at the same time, there are so many devotees here, and then you, even new people, they get lost in the crowd. You just don't notice them. You need to come to someone, because the program is not focused at the moment. So maybe if we have in the future targeted programs with you from new people, then you're focused on it. Like, for instance, when we had Sunday feasts in the town previously, you could not come to the Sunday feast and not to be asked, who are you, what's your name, how... It was like two, three people are coming at the same time, and then you see, okay, he's first, okay, he will ask first. It was like this, because it was meant for new people to come.
There's a lot of places where that's happening, or where there's two weekend programs, and or where the temple, like in Washington, D.C., they're really focused that the Sunday feast is for new people. So to have, some things that are really focused. You know, what you said also made me think about, especially getting people to use their talents in Krishna service, and what you were talking about also. I think it may be having a planned program of devotees who connect with people in the community crowd and congregation, visit their homes regularly, call them regularly. I know that in America at least, there are Christian ministers who have a little, I don't know if they have it virtually now, but what they used to do, they would have a card with each person, or everyone who comes, they get a card with their name and their phone number, and every day they call somebody on that list. How are you doing? What's going on with you? And to get them involved in this society. Now that also means having things for people to do. So if the only things that are going on in our ISKCON is deity worship and the programs, then it's hard to connect people's talents. Yes?
Yeah.
Then people are much more going to either just not engage their talents in Krishna service, or just do it on their own. So this requires those of us who are committed or core members to think of how we can expand what we're offering and engage people like that. That may mean engaging people who are leaders, who are natural leaders and natural organizers, in having projects that are connected to this group. It may also mean taking people who are doing their own private things and finding at least a time and a place and a way that they can keep that connection. That, yes, okay, fine, this is good that you're doing your own private thing for Krishna. That's fantastic. We don't want to stop that, and we don't even want to control it. Because, you know, don't come and control me, you know. But at the same time, something where there's some connection. Maybe the person doing that can come and give a presentation in the temple to the devotees about what they're learning and teach other devotees. So they don't just feel that they're isolated. Maybe sometimes some of the temple managers can go to their program, not to check up on them and correct them, but just to appreciate it and participate in their program. So you have things going in both directions. And that way the temple managers don't have to create everything and manage everything, but they keep something there. Yes?
I think that one of things that can be done is from the side of the temple is to go to visit all the members of, I don't know, committed members and congregation. And the other thing, what can be done is to inspire a certain group of devotees to come for a weekend in the temple and be together. For example, having music there, and we have, but not now in summer, Grihastha weekends, where those with children, you know, we make a program for children, and then the parents are very eager to come because their children are cared in Krishna consciousness, and then we all do the service together. So this is very nice, I think, program, which we could do together, and then the devotees from outside and devotees from temple, if they are interested, they bind together.
That is very nice. And I'm just thinking that devotees in North America arranged a seminar for devotees who are in the medical profession. You know, you're talking about grihasthas with children, and you're talking about targeted audiences. But they had a retreat at Argita Nagri Farm in Pennsylvania for any devotees who are connected with the medical profession. So it's a broad, you know, doctors, nurses, chiropractors, alternate medicine, and so forth. And some of the devotees gave presentations there, and they had seminars. So again, it's on ISKCON property. So if we have things like that, you know, perhaps at least two weekends a month, we could have some gatherings of devotees with different interests. And particularly what you said about children made me think about what's being done, especially in the UAE, the United Arab Emirates, where preaching is a little difficult. And what they've done there is they preach to the children. They make devotees by having programs for children. So the parents become devotees because the children become devotees. It's very interesting. I haven't seen that used elsewhere. But as far as people who have children, so the Agasura demon said very nicely that if the children die, everybody else dies. He says, if I kill all the children, then everybody else in Vrindavan will die also. Well, it works positively as well. If you do nice things for the children, you'll get everybody else also. And if we don't have activities for children, then people who have children will tend to be very involved elsewhere. You know, their children are going to school, and they're going to soccer, and they're going to violin, and they're going to gymnastics, and the parents are going to be very busy with all those activities for their children. And if they come to the temple, and the only thing they're ever told in the temple is, please get your children out of here, they're causing a problem, then those people are likely to be just your community or crowd, and not to go past that. So that's And if we want to have a society, I mean, this seems rather obvious, but if we want to have a society, then we probably should have children. That seems to be a very radical and revolutionary idea. Not just in this country, but in Europe, it seems to be a radical and revolutionary. People aren't having children in Europe anymore. It's become a real problem. What is it? I think Italy's the worst, isn't it? People are having so few children in Italy. So the concept of children is definitely going out of fashion. But I think that to encourage people to have children altogether, and then to have facility for children, is a huge... Once people have children, if you don't have facility for their children, they will distance themselves. And this also has to do with the time of the day. If the programs are all late in the day, then families with children are not so likely to come. Their children have to wake up for the next day for school and so forth. Other thoughts? Yes?
I saw using talent in service. I working many age in school, and I know my pupil, my disciple. I know very well their talent. But because we are a new society, the our vote on the, our leaders don't know our talent of the member. Because of that, they have many job, and they use other think of this member, not this. You understand?
Yes.
They don't recognize talent of the member. This is problem. I saw in this way. So you understand?
Yes, I do understand. So, this is a question of appreciation and responsibility. It goes back to what both of you said. Maybe a designated person who regularly, you know, gets together with the people in these different membership categories. What are your talents? What would you like to do for Krishna? And, you know, maybe you want to do it mostly independently, but again, with some connection. Some way that it can also be connected to ISKCON. By the way, we will all be very committed to any organization or society that gives us a place to use our talents for the greater good. It is one of the most satisfying things that any living being can do, is to use their talents and their personalities for the greater good. Now, if we're just working for the greater good and doing something for Krishna, that's satisfying, but that's not going to be enough. We really have to act according to our talents and propensities. In most of our temples, this is a big problem. We don't feel that we have enough way to engage people in their temples. We don't have enough to do. You know, which is very ironic, because if we really want to spread Krishna consciousness, there's a lot to do. But if somebody comes, well, what is there to do? Well, you can clean the temple room. You can make the garlands, you can cut up the carrots. You know. Is there anything else to do? No. So this is, and then you think, well, I'll use my talents elsewhere. And then the leaders may be thinking, well, I'm already so busy, I hardly have time to sleep, and now I'm going to have to also find out everybody's talents. But I think it would be good if we had, you know, a separate person. There's a very interesting book I read called The Dream Manager, about a company. Do you read it? About a company that became very, very prosperous and very happy by having somebody who had, that was their designated job, to help people fulfill their dreams, not even necessarily in the company, which I found very fascinating. But it would be helpful if every community had a few people that was their service, like you're saying, to visit people. But not just to visit people and give them some prasadam, but also to help them, you know, okay, what are you good at? What do you like to do? And then to try to match them with some kind of service. And we were having a discussion the other day about that most people are not able just to engage themselves. You know, that most people need to work with some team. You can't just say to everybody, well, you have this talent, go start your own Krishna conscious project with this talent. You know, okay, you like teaching, go start your own Krishna conscious school. You know, or you like art, go start your own Krishna conscious art gallery. And most people are just not able to do that. That's a very tiny minority of people that are going to be able to take that level of initiative. So then it's a question of connecting people, finding, okay, who in our community can take that kind of initiative. But it probably needs to be a designated person other than your very overworked managers. And that's a question of finding someone who has the talent to do that. By the way, a place that's quite successful at this is Bhaktivinoda Men. So they have a devotee who is in charge of managing the volunteers. They have thousands of volunteers. And they have a whole database of volunteers. And on the database of volunteers, they list what are their interests, what are their talents, what are their professions. And they have people who specifically match up the volunteers with, and those are volunteers who do that. And some of the volunteers are managers. And some of them are, you know, so you can engage one of the volunteers in also engaging some of the other volunteers. And it's quite successful. And they have, you know, just for Janmashtami every year, they have 1,000 people who volunteer every day for a month. They come after work. They're there from about 6 o'clock to 11:30 every night for a month before Janmashtami. And people are really engaged according to their talents. And you can say, well, they have a big community, but you know, they didn't have a big community from day one. And this is how they built their community. I mean, what you're saying is something I found very frustrating. And I found it especially frustrating for our children.
I think this is a thing of dharma also. We talk about dharma.
Yes, it is. It is, and it's something that has to do with varnashram, especially with varna. So, you know, if we say we want, if we, yes, varnashram, jai, jai, varnashram. But that's a lot of what it means, is being able to connect people's talents and abilities with something that's needed for service. And if the way that you're doing that is with somebody who's connected with ISKCON, then that's going to connect you, not just with Krishna consciousness, but with ISKCON. Yes?
It seems like plain and simple lack of organization. There should be a hierarchy and more coordination, and then just...
Well, when you say that, everything in me cringes.
No, I'm not. It's not a criticism, but just an observation that there should definitely be more of some type of networking.
Well, you could do that without a hierarchy, though. Because Srila Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta were very much against having much hierarchy and organization in that.
Organization.
Well, you could do it. You could do it in what's called an adhocracy, which is where you have more fluid teams of people. It would still be organization, but it would be a much less hierarchical form of organization. And I think not only was Srila Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta against having a rigid hierarchy, but I would say that most people I know who come to Krishna consciousness are comfortable with rigid hierarchies. And I've just seen this pretty much everywhere, with a few exceptions. unless you're at the top of the rigid hierarchy, and maybe then you're really into it. But in general, people, I see they're not into it. And they'll, if there's a very rigid hierarchy, they'll generally back away from it. With a few exceptions. I've seen a few communities with rigid hierarchies that at least look good from the outside until you start talking to the people personally with a closed door and no tape recorder. And then you hear something else. What I'd like to see, I like your idea about organization, I'd like to see more fluid teams where different people took responsibility, people who had that kind of talent, for organizing different areas in conjunction with the temple. So instead of, okay, I'm just going to do my own private project over there, you know, why don't you have as your private project to be helping people engage their talents in a way that's connected to the temple? And it can be a much more of a partnership and team program rather than a hierarchy. And in fact, if you get, I'm sure you have in your community, people who are very self-motivated and self-regulated, you want to empower people like that who die if they're under a tight hierarchy. They just wither up and die, and go or they go someplace else. But you really want to find those people and empower them and say, hey, please do this for ISKCON and connect it with ISKCON. Have some, don't just do it completely independent. But I like your point about it needing to be more organized. I think that's very, very important. Yes?
My suggestion is also that we have more specific education. Where we will educate different devotees in different areas. Not just areas that are connected with spiritual life, but areas that are connected also with what is concerned with the varna, and with the dharma and these things. And in this sense, they will not need to go so much around to get this knowledge. They will stay among the devotees.
Well, again, the more that the temple is meeting these kind of needs, Sadhana Seva Sankirtan Sangam Shiksha, and here you're talking very much about Shiksha. Then the more people are going to have a make a commitment to this. That's just simple common sense. And I think it's very much like what I was talking about with the children. So, you know, if your children have their academics, their violin lessons, their gymnastics all outside, the parents, not only are the parents not going to have the time to be involved with this one, but they're not even going to have the interest because their children's needs are taken care of elsewhere. But it's the same with us as adults. If I'm learning all my practical life skills outside of ISKCON, my level of commitment to ISKCON is going to be less. It's just going to be a little piece. Well, I'm going to go to ISKCON for the Sankirtan. You know, I'm just going to go to ISKCON for some sadhana and some sankirtan and everything else I'm going to get elsewhere. Now, I think we have enough, again, but you're talking about organization. This would require, you don't want to put it all on your temple board, but if you had somebody in the community who could give them that as their job, organizing regular seminars, both in the temple and in people's homes, and have it very much that this is an ISKCON program, and bring in different speakers and different teachers. The more that we can show that Krishna consciousness takes care of our immediate needs in the world, the more people are going to be interested to do it. I mean, if Krishna consciousness is just a program for transcending the world, if that's all it is, which, by the way, is a very Bhajan and Nandi kind of conception. If Krishna consciousness is not also about think of me and fight, then people are not going to be as committed to something. That's just a fact. But if we have both, okay, it's about transcending the world, but it's about also transcending the world while being a productive and expert member of the world, which was... That's Bhagavad Gita. You know, Arjuna said, hey, let me just get out of here. fight this battle, heck with this. I'm just going to go in the forest and meditate today. And Krishna says, no, stay in the world in a different consciousness. And if we're not teaching people how to do that. I mean, this was my whole discussion with Radhan Mandimar. And I said, I don't think we have a lack of Western music, food, and clothing. I said, I don't see that as a problem. We have plenty of Western music, food, and clothing in the Hare Krishna. I said, what we lack is we lack instruction to people how to be Krishna conscious as a husband, wife, how to be Krishna conscious as a bank manager, how to be Krishna conscious as a chemistry teacher. That we haven't really taught people. We just say, well, just go do it. And I think one reason that we haven't taught people this, can I be very frank?
Is
I think that a lot of our leading preachers have never done it. I'm sorry, but that's just the reality. The main people that we put up as our heroes and our main preachers have absolutely never, not for 5 minutes, worked out in the world as a devotee. They've never done it. And they just don't know how because they haven't done it. So all they can talk about is theoretical. And we also need preachers who are married and have worked out in the world. And are doing it now. We need to empower those people, and it shouldn't just be, well, if there's a sannyasi who's been a sannyasi for 45 years, that 300 people come, and then there's a grihastha who can say to you, hey, here's how you can be a chemistry teacher and be Krishna conscious. Only 5 people come, because they think, well, who is this guy? What does he have to offer me? So, I'd like to see that we start to have a different culture. And that the people who know how to be Krishna conscious out in the world, people like Peter Burwashar, that people like that are also leading preachers, that we have both. Prabhupada talks about how Vedic society, the household of Brahmanas who lived in the village, and the traveling renunciates were both teachers of Krishna consciousness, and they both have something different to offer. The renunciates have one vision, and the householders have another vision, and they're both very important. You don't want to only have one. So I see this as just absolutely crucial if we want people to commit more and more to ISKCON. If ISKCON is the place where I learn how to be a transcendental bank manager, and how to be a transcendental chemistry teacher, and how to be a transcendental mother and a transcendental husband, and wow, I'm going to want to be a member of ISKCON, just because. So, to have, and again, it doesn't have to be anyone sitting in this room organizing, but somebody could organize that kind of thing going on. I can also tell you what doesn't work. You have to be a committed member of ISKCON. That doesn't work. Otherwise, you're not loyal to Prabhupada or something like that. That does not work. It'll work for a week or two. It doesn't work. Making people feel guilty. Telling them what to do. That's not the way to do it. Any other thoughts? Yes?
You mentioned the Bhakti Vedanta Manor and their organization. It seems like it would be nice to have models taken from more successful temples and their organizations, and those models can be displayed to other temples.
Yes, in fact. One of the most proven ways of changing a society is you look for what they call the bright spots. You look for the areas in that society where something's being done right, and you use that as a model. And one has to be careful, because Bhakti Vedanta Manor is so much more developed than almost any other temple. that you'd have to have people who were there at the beginning to tell you how to get started. Because if we just look at how it is now, we'd say, well, we don't have a database of 10,000 volunteers. We don't have 60,000 people coming for generosity. And you could say, well, they're Indians. But in Moscow, they have 40,000 people coming for generosity, and they're not Indians. They don't have Indians in Moscow. There's only like 7,000 Indians in the whole of Moscow. So that would be a very, very good idea. And we do have, now I haven't been to them, but we have what they call the International Leaders Sangha in Mayapur every couple of years. And I think that's one of the purposes, is that people who are very successful in one area can share what they're doing. But this is a way in which the leaders should be able to network and find out, okay, in what particular way would we like to grow ISKCON here in Zagreb? And what other places in the world are doing the kind of thing that we would like to institute? There's a lot more successes going on than most people know about. And this is something, by the way, in which you really can benefit from your traveling preachers. Because your traveling preachers go to all these places. And so you can ask them, hey, where is there a place where they're doing this? Or where is there a place where they're doing this? Or where is there a place where... I mean, for example, the practical seminars, that goes on quite a lot in New Zealand. That's a place where they've been doing that for many years. So that would be a good way to start. Ask people who are constantly traveling the world and come to your temple. This is something we'd like to do to increase people's commitment to ISKCON. Okay, do you know of any place where that's being done successfully? And then maybe we can invite somebody from that place and they could stay for a week and help us develop something. Very, very good. Any other thoughts? Yes.
I just wanted to raise this.
Follow up.
And to follow up what we heard about Manor, is that the situation there is a little bit different because they really have many Indians there who are quite affordable with the Lakshmi, and their system is like this, that managers of ISKCON there, they don't have to go out to the work. They are maintained by ISKCON. For example, myself, I work outside, give money in the temple, and then give my time in the temple. You understand? Everything. So, if I worked only for ISKCON, I could give much more. But I must also do the... And it's not only with me, it's with everybody here. So that's one thing, what is the difference. But what I want to say, how it started, it's not now that Indians come because, you know, they have no other choice. In London, they have many Hindu temples.
Yes.
So they don't need to go to Radha Krishna temple. There are Shiva temples, there are Dishambu temples. There are different temples they can go. But what happened? It was for 13 years that the TP of the Manor temple, together with two his closest...
Assistants.
They used to go every night to visit the congregations.
Mm-hmm.
And then after 3 years visiting them, talking with them, trying to engage them for their what they can do and so on, they made a lot of devotees, a lot of people committed to it. Mm-hmm. It was a tremendous work for 13 years.
And it may take that. You know, in Houston Temple, almost all the devotees there are working. So there you have a temple where there's very few people that are maintained by ISKCON. Very, very few. People are doing that. They are working, and they're giving their money and their time. And there, they've really also, you know, they're not as developed as the men. It's also an Indian community. But they've also developed this network of people who are in charge of different things and developing different projects, but all keeping some connection with this. But they don't have that, you know, they do have a lot of money there. I mean, they just built an incredible temple. Just one of those amazing, unbelievable, wow kind of places. And they had $1 million left over when they were done, which was probably more astonishing than the building. But they, so they do have money there. But they, the devotees who work for the temple, almost all of them, maybe just one or two exceptions, they have outside sources of income. Instead of putting all the burden on one of those people, you know, okay, take care of your family and your job and your sadhana and ISKCON management. Ah! You know, they spread the responsibility around. And that was what I saw on the mat, that the responsibility spread. Or even, they'll pull a volunteer to be a project manager. So the volunteer has a family, has a job, all that stuff. But they call a volunteer to be a project manager. So it's not just that the devotees who are maintained by the temple are managing. And they pull someone who's a professional project. What they do out in the world is they're a project manager. And they say, okay, you know, can you manage this project? And then they're managing people who are also all part-time volunteers who have their work. They're all in that category. And because the person who's the project manager has a job and a family, that person is not going to expect the other volunteers to do some sort of crazy kill-yourself schedule. They're going to have reasonable expectations of the person that they manage so that it's going to be a satisfying experience. Yes?
Take turns, because I was noticing how on the bus on the way here the drivers would switch, so one driver wouldn't be driving too much. So I was thinking with like management, even like volunteers, they make sure that they're not like doing service for like 12 hours straight,
right,
and that they get some kind of break so they don't feel like they're being overworked.
Yes, in fact, in some temples they do that even with the management. They have a management board and they rotate.
Yeah.
And we do that with the GBC. So the GBC chairman changes every year. And the vice chairman also changes. So that it's not too much of a burden on the person. Yeah. And that's what I meant about avoiding like a rigid hierarchy. Because in what's called an adhocracy, your teams are fluid. You'll make a particular committee or group for a particular purpose. When that purpose is over, the committee is dissolved. And so a person who will be a head of a committee for one purpose may just be a member of a committee for another purpose. And Srila Prabhupada specifically talked about doing that. And it's a very Brahminical form of management where different people trade off taking different roles according to what's needed and their talents. Just in closing, I'd like to try to give a little perspective, both with what you were saying in terms of Krishna consciousness sometimes seeming impossible, and what you were saying in terms of doing these kind of management things in ISKCON seeming impossible. Many times we know that there are good ideas, and we know that there are good ideas that will work because they've been tried and tested in so many places, other places in ISKCON and by other religious and spiritual organizations. But the end product seems so high and so unattainable with our present resources of time and energy and money and people, intelligence, and so forth, that we just don't even really put effort into getting started. You know, we think Krishna consciousness is too high, I'll just do a little bit. And, well, really engaging people in ISKCON is too high, I'll just do a little bit. And look, it's just their problem, they're just going to have to be sincere enough to do it. That doesn't work either, by the way. The reason, you know, if you were really sincere, you'd be more committed. Where it works for a week. So my suggestion is instead, you get a vision, and this is on a personal level, to where I want to be in my Krishna consciousness, and also where I would like to, where I would, each of us, where I would like to be in terms of my commitment. And then also for at least the leading devotees here, which is not just people in with titled positions, but any of the senior devotees who are, I don't know how to put this politely, who are congenial people and workable with. Because just because you're a senior devotee doesn't mean you're congenial and workable with. But for the senior members who are also congenial and workable with, that you come together and you look at a vision. Just like we have a vision of where I want to be in my Krishna consciousness, I have a vision as to where I want my relationship to be with ISKCON. Get a vision for what you would like to see in Zagreb. You don't have to think about all of Croatia or all of Europe or, you know, all of the world, or this is what Pupur Porcha probably talks about, all of the universe. I never quite figured that one out, you know. Prabhupada says we're going to spread, just like we spread all over the world, he said now we're going to spread all over the universe, so I'm not quite sure. Does that mean spaceships, or how to take another birth on another planet? I'm not quite sure how that works. But at least if you can have, you know, a vision for Zagreb, and if you can't do that, at least a vision for the people that you are already connected with Krishna consciousness. And don't spend years on a vision. You know, you don't have to spend years figuring out what your vision is. You really don't. I mean, I was just yesterday talking to a good friend of mine, and I said, who's kind of lost. And I said, figure out what you need, but what's the minimum you need? And she said, well, that alone will take me a week. I said, that's not going to take you a week. I said, what do you need? I said, you need a desk, a chair, internet, you need access to a top university library. She's doing some service for the TLP. I said, you need some kitchen. He says, is there anything else you need? You know, and then she emailed me back about an hour later. She said, I need a place where I can play Mridanga any time of the day or night and nobody will be disturbed. She said, that's awesome. And I said, basically, that, you know, that you can get that vision for yourself. It doesn't take a whole lot of time. I don't think we'd spend more than 3 or 4 hours. Figure out what your vision is. And the reason I'd say don't spend more than 3 or 4 hours is it can change. Krishna has a way of changing the vision. And you don't want to spend months and months and months and months and months on it. It's just kind of silly. But you do want to have some idea of whatever you want. What would it look like? If we had people who wanted to be Krishna conscious, and we were moving people from the community and the crowd into the congregation, people from the congregation to the committed, and people from the committed to the core. Let's say our vision is that we moved, that within a year, we moved 10% of each category to a closer category. That could be a very simple vision. And within the year, we strive for the members in all of these areas, the 10% of the members in all these areas, double their commitment to membership, maturity, ministry, and missions. That's a simple vision. That took me 30 seconds to come up with that vision. So you need a vision, but it doesn't have to be a complex thing with categories and subcategories and 100 PowerPoint slides and, you know, a 58-person committee that works on it for 2 years. And they do this in the government schools in America. So they get these visions that are in a notebook this thick, 300 pages, and they present, they really do, and they present it to the community, and it's, and then they put it on the shelf, and it doesn't do anything. So don't do that. It's not what I'm suggesting. But do get a vision together. And then say, what can we do now to move forward? And you get at least some key people. Key people are people who are, they're congenial, they're pleasant people. They have some maturity in Krishna consciousness. They know something. Okay. They don't think we're all God, or, you know, they have some maturity. And they're people who are willing to do something. They shouldn't just be talkers. So if you have at least those that the people in those three categories, they're pleasant team members, they know something, some truly, and they don't just talk, they're willing to do something. Get together a basic vision. Don't spend a lot of time on it, but something. And then each person commits that they're going to do something to go toward that vision every day. Something. Just like in our personal vision of our Krishna consciousness. We have a personal vision that I want to be wrapped in meditation on Krishna's form 24 hours a day. Okay, if that's our personal vision, what can I do on it today? Well, I can, you know, meditate on the deities more, or I can meditate on my job a little more. Do you follow me? And do something. Take some step every day. And what happens if you do those two things? If you figure out where you want to go, and leave it flexible, because Krishna will adjust it. Definitely, he will. And if you take a step every day, even if it's just 2 minutes of your day, but you take a step in that direction, and then you get this group together again, maybe once a month. Okay. What are you doing? What are you doing? How are you progressing? Then something very interesting happens. Krishna helps you. If you say, the goal is so high, I'm not even going to try. First I have to have the money, then I have to have the people, then I have to have the time, then I have to have this. And after I get all of that, then maybe I'll start. Maybe. And for now, if people aren't more involved in ISKCON, it's their fault because they're not sincere. Then you know what? Krishna doesn't help very much. It's just kind of how it works. And if you say, this is where we want to go, make it something big enough so that it's worth working for, but small enough so that it's you can head towards it, and then every day, something, even if it's just 2 minutes every day, something. And then it's key to get together occasionally, even if it's just once a week or once a month. What did you do? Okay, what did you do in the last week to head towards this? What did you do in the last week? Otherwise it fizzles. Otherwise it's this big hoopla, and then 2 months later nothing's happening. So, some vision, don't take a lot of time, but have some vision that everybody buys into, at least key people. Everybody on that group makes a commitment to doing something every day. It doesn't have to be a lot of time, 1 or 2 minutes. That could be calling somebody. It could be reading something that would help you. Something. And then getting together regularly. Again, it could be brief. It could be a half an hour before the Sunday feast. It doesn't have to be a special time. It's a special group effort. What'd you do? Those efforts will not be enough. They don't have to be enough. When you do that, Krishna helps you. Krishna will start sending you the right people. He will send you money. He will send you the intelligence. He will send you the facility. That's how Srila Prabhupada did it. And I've seen that's pretty much how anybody who's spiritually minded, that's how it seems to be the Krishna's modus operandi. Yes.
Just want to say about this, how Krishna helps. We are now organizing the Ratha Yatra. This is the first Ratha Yatra in Zagreb. And two basic concerns now what we have is how to get enough Lakshmi, because it requires Lakshmi, and it's not in the temple that people come and give the donations. So it's hard, so it's not easy to collect Lakshmi. The other thing is how to get enough crowd, because also it's always many people, not only general people, devotees, they just go out to vacation and so on. You know, the streets are empty. And yesterday I was called to come to the Indian ambassador, and he wanted me to talk about yesterday evening about the Ratha Yatra. And he was very concerned about how we will get crowd to this event. And if he can help by advertising somewhere that his place is to call different people to his channels. And when I was leaving, he also helped, he offered the financial help
for this.
That's how it works. That's how it works. And it may come in ways that you just completely did not expect. It may be just something that, you know, completely out of your range of thinking. And Krishna seems to like to do things that way. So. He's just 15, you know. He's an eternal kid. He's a teenager. That he likes to. He's very youthful. And very playful. So he very much likes helping in funny ways. It will be like that. I mean, Ravindra Shukrabhu likes to tell this story. How the temple didn't have enough money to pay their rent. It was $400. And he was the treasurer. So he went to the temple president. He said, you know, our rent is due tomorrow. And we don't have it. And the tall president said, we'll go out on Sankirtan. Well, Sankirtan in those days meant that you went out in dhotis and saris. And they weren't even real dhotis, you know. Real saris, they were just pieces of cloth from the cloth shop. And, we had very strange saris, especially. And it was very heavy cloth. And the only way you could keep it on your head, you had to put a safety pin here. And then it was so heavy it wouldn't move. And then the cloth was so heavy it was dragging on the floor. It was kind of this gray border on the floor. And it was way too long. We had pleats. I had 25 pleats. Sorry. So we were very funny looking. We went out, and the dromedaries never matched, you know, the particular shade of kurta. And we didn't even have kurtas. They would have just like knit shirts with a top, like a sannyasi top piece, you know, different colors. So I meant going out like that and just chanting and trying to sell Back to Godhead magazines for 25 cents. So how are you going to raise $400 doing that? You know, you just for tomorrow. You're going out on the streets like that. So they had collected probably about $10 or $15 in quarters, just 25 cent pieces, and they were about to go back to the temple. There was the van. They were about to cross the street and get in the van. The minister said, he said he saw across the street this very, very tall, blonde, very, very handsome looking man, just strikingly handsome and tall, looking around like he was looking for someone. And he looks at the Harinam party, nods his head, crosses the street, and hands Ravindra Shukrabhu an envelope that says, for Krishna, turns around, and walks away. And of course, in the envelope was $400. And I had actually a very similar experience that in Chicago, when the tall president had ordered all this paraphernalia for the deities, and he didn't think about the customs charges, like what you just went through with all the VAT charges for the Kamashiksha books. So he hadn't thought about that, and he didn't have the money to pay the charges. And I was doing the temple treasury then, I'm pretty sure it was $683. So one of my Brahmacharini friends, you met her recently, Kalalapa, at the wedding. So we were at the airport doing Sankirtan. And she was, I don't know, just was talking to some random person in the airport trying to sell them a book. And she came up to me that we needed the money the next day or they were going to send the whole shipment back to India. You know, we had exhausted our time to come up with the money. And she came up to me and she said, oh, you're not going to believe what just happened. I said, what just happened? She said, I gave someone a Bhagavad Gita. And they said, here, take all the money in my wallet. And I said, well, how much did they give you? She said, I don't know, let's go count it. And she counted it, and it was $683. I've seen it literally happen like that. And I've seen the people just come forward, you know, when we needed artwork for our children's books. And I had never done anything like that before. And I had a devotee say, oh, you know, I know these devotees in China who are professional animators. And they can illustrate your books. And he said, I'll arrange everything, which is not what happened. I ended up having to go to China. But even by going to China, I mean, I was in Australia for medical treatment, and I met this devotee, and he just said, you know, I have this god brother, god sister in China who are professional animators. I'll set it up for you. He said, but you have to have everything ready by May 1st, which forced us. We would have taken another year, you know, pushed us for a deadline. So I sent him everything in China, and he said, oh, this is too complicated. It was about 250 illustrations. He said, this is too complicated. I can't do this. You have to come. He said, but you have to come in the next 10 days. He said, otherwise they won't have time. So my passport was in the New Zealand visa office. I was getting a New Zealand work visa. And they said it was going to take another 45 days. Before I got the visa, we called. They said, "There's no." They said, "If you take your passport out now, then you have to start the whole process all over again: the $400, the medical exam, the fingerprints, everything." How are we going to do this? So then, an hour later, someone from the office called and said, "We have a question." They called the school. We have a question about this passport. And the person at the school said, you know, we need her to go to China immediately. Is there any way you can expedite the process? And the person was Indian, and he said, oh, is this the Hare Krishna? He said, I'll do it for you. He said, it'll be ready in 1 hour. So we went there, we picked up the passport, had the New Zealand visa in it. We went over to the Chinese embassy, and we got the Chinese visa again in an hour. And then someone came forward and said, I'll pay your ticket, because I can have the money for the ticket. I said, I'll pay your ticket. And literally, 2 days later, I was in China. And then I met with these artists, and they had just 10 days. Well, now they had only 8 days left. And we had 250 pictures. So they didn't speak any English, as in not hello. No English. And I had to get them to do a sketch of each picture. They did that in 3 days. 250 pictures. Without language. And then when I needed to communicate with them, it was very difficult because I don't speak any Chinese. I don't know how to say hello in Chinese. And I ended up finding a devotee who was from China, but who had married a Britisher. And so she knew both Chinese and English. And she could work. And so Krishna kept sending the right people. And I see this in general, is that's how Krishna works. You know, get a vision where you want to go. Be open that Krishna will change it. He will change it. But get your vision. Get key people involved. Do something. Something. It doesn't matter how small it is, it just has to be real. And have the group come back together so you have someone that you're held accountable to someone. This is what I did on Monday, this is what I did on Tuesday. And then Krishna's interesting. What he'll do, how he'll do it. You'll have all kinds of cool stories to tell. And not only will you build your congregation and build your temple, but you'll also build your own personal relationship with Krishna. Because as you'll see, Krishna working with you in these really funny ways. He does these really out-of-the-box funny ways of working with you, generally. Sometimes he does in-the-box normal ways, but usually not. Your own relationship with Krishna really deepens, and your own faith and your own joy at this back and forth that you have with Krishna. That I try to figure out where you want me to go, and I take a little step, and all of a sudden you drive out with a car. It's kind of fun. Is that okay? And this definitely works. It's definitely Krishna's modus operandi, how he functions. And sometimes things will seem catastrophic. Abhimanyu got killed. There will be catastrophes. There will be. Somebody will quit, and something will get lost, and money will be wasted. Plans will have to be redone, and somebody will argue. It will be that kind of thing. But you still just every day take steps. Okay, we should end now. It's quite late. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON's 50th anniversary Ki Jai.